So today is the appearance day, the disappearance day of Madhvacharya. We're going to have a little Bhagavatam, and then would you like to hear something about the life of Madhvacharya?
Yes.
I'm sure you would. And now I'm even more sure. Madhvacharya is very important because if someone asks you what sampradaya you're in, what parampara gave you the teachings that you now base your life on, which is a pretty serious thing, actually. You would say, you know, as you draw yourself up another inch or two, you would say, the Sri Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So it's good to know something about Madhva. So today is the day he... Well, no, it's actually not the day he passed away. Today is the day that he... We always call it his disappearance day, but in this case, it was his disappearance from the ashram. At 79 years of age, he walked out of the ashram to go to, he told all his disciples, I'm now going to Badrik Ashram, which is high in the Himalayas. He'd been there once, twice, and he was going back for a third time. This time he went, and he never returned. So today is the day that he left the ashram. If my authorities are to be believed. So what number is it? 28 and 29. Oh, so you're on the 10th canto.
Yeah.
Just see, everybody's skipped the first 9 cantos here in Soho Street. I've gone immediately to the 10th canto for some rasa tattva. Or have you spent 30 years getting up to the 10th canto?
43.
43 years getting up to the canto. I think you deserve it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Have we got both verses on the board there? You should thus return to the sacrificial arena because your husbands, the learned Brahmins, are householders and need your assistance to finish their respective sacrifices. Text 29. Sri Patnya Uchu Maivam Vipo Arhati Bhavan Garitun Nisham Sam Maivam Vipo. Sorry. Maivam Vipo Ratiti Bhavan Garitun Nisham Sam. What's the tune that I'm looking for? Is it? My bam vibo vibo hati bhavan galitam nani samsham is an extra. So, let's see if we can do it as we go along. Satyam kurushva nigamam tapaparamulam. Satyam kurushva negamam tava paramulam.
Satyam kurushva negamam
tava paramulam.
Satyam kurushva negamam tava paramulam.
Prata
vayam
tulasi
dama
padavasrishtam. Prata vayam tulasi dama padavasrishtam.
Prata
vayam tulasi dama padavasrishtam.
Keshair
nivodham
Adivangya
Samasta
Bandun
Keshair Nivodham Adivangya
Samasta
Bandun
Keshair
Keshair nivodhamati atilangya samasta bandhun. Shri Patnya Uchu, Mai Vam Vipo Hati Bhavan Gaditun Nisangsham. Mai Vam Vipo Hati, it's because we're trying to say Arhati, but the A is missing. We just have an apostrophe there. So actually that word becomes then Vibor. Viborhati. Viborhati. One word. Mai vam vibor hati bhavan gaditam nisamsham.
Mai vam vibor hati bhavan gaditam nisamsham.
Satyam kurushva nigamam tava padamulam.
Satyam kurushva nigamam tava padamulam.
Prapta vayantu lasidama padava srishtam.
Prapta vayantu lasidama padava srishtam.
Keshar nivodam atilangya samasta bandhu.
Keshar nivodam atilangya samasta bandhu.
Shri Patnya Uchu.
Shri
lives of the Brahmanas said,
ma,
not,
evam,
like this,
vibho,
O Almighty Lord,
arhati,
ought,
bhavan,
you,
garitam,
to speak,
nrishamsam,
partially,
satyam,
true,
kurushva,
please make,
nigamam,
the promise given in the revealed scripture,
tava,
your,
paramulam,
the base of the lotus feet,
prapta,
having obtained,
vayam,
we,
tulasidhama,
the garlands of Tulsi leaves,
tada,
by your foot,
abhasrishtam,
neglectfully kicked away,
kejai,
upon our hair,
nivodam,
in order to carry,
adilandya,
rejecting,
samasta,
all,
bandhum,
relations.
Translation.
The wives of the Brahmins replied, O Almighty One, please do not speak such cruel words. Rather, you should fulfill your promise that you always reciprocate with your devotees in kind. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest so we may carry upon our heads the garlands of Tulsi leaves you may neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships. Please repeat. The wives of the Brahmins replied,
O Almighty One,
please do not speak such cruel words.
Rather,
you should fulfill your promise
that you always reciprocate with your devotees in kind.
Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest so we may carry upon our heads the garlands of Tulsi leaves. You may neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships. Purport. In this purport, we hear a lot from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's not reported speech, but in his realization, he's saying the wives of the Brahmins would say this, and then Krishna might have replied like this. It's a long conversation. Perhaps he's done it in other purports as well. And it's to allow us to come more into the pastime. Because if we don't, then we might just read this verse and just continue. We'll have a superficial understanding. So he's explaining to us the bhava of the wives of the Brahmins, which is a very important pastime. Here, the Brahmins' wives are saying something similar to what the gopis say at the beginning of the rasa dance. When Lord Krishna tells them to go home as well, like this verse, the gopis' statement begins with the words, "My vangibho bhakti bhavan karitam nisamsham." Nigama refers to the Vedic literature, which states that one who surrenders at the lotus feet of the Lord does not return to this material world. Thus the Brahmins' wives appealed to the Lord that since they had surrendered to him, it was unfair for him to order them to return to their materialistic husbands. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna might have pointed out to the Brahmins' wives, "You young ladies are members of the aristocratic Brahmin community, so how can you surrender at the feet of a mere cowherd boy?" To this, the ladies might have replied, "Since we have already surrendered at your lotus feet, and since we desire to become your servants, we are obviously not maintaining a false identification as members of the so-called Brahmin community. You can easily ascertain this from our words." Lord Krishna might have replied, "I'm a cowherd boy, and my proper maidservants and girlfriends are the cowherd girls, the gopis." The wives might have answered, "True, let them be so. Let them shine forth if you are embarrassed in front of your relatives to make Brahmin ladies your maidservants. We certainly don't want to embarrass you. We will not go to your village, but will rather remain in Vrindavan, like presiding deities of the forest.
We simply desire to perfect our lives by even a slight trace of connection with you. Thus, by the spiritual insight of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, we learn that the Brahmins' wives offered to remain at a distance and simply to take the tulsi leaves that would fall from the lotus feet of Krishna or be crushed by the feet of his girlfriends when he would embrace them. The ladies offered to carry these tulsi leaves upon their heads, thus renouncing the desire to become Krishna's intimate girlfriends or maidservants, a position they knew was difficult to achieve. The young Brahmin ladies begged to remain in Vrindavan Forest. If the Lord had then asked, "Then what will your family members say?" they would have replied, "We have already transcended our so-called relatives because we are seeing you, the Supreme Lord, face to face." We have a difficulty in Krishna consciousness. It's difficult for men, ladies, and ladies, men. It's difficult for ladies too. Because on the one hand, we have a philosophy that we're not this material body. That's the first thing that you hear when you walk up the stairs. Practically, you don't even have to walk up the stairs. They'll catch you in the restaurant downstairs. You know you're not that body. You're a spirit soul, servant for Krishna. This is the first thing we hear. And then, as they give us the Bhagavad Gita, or as we come into the temple room and see that this movement is all about him and his books, and we take a Bhagavad Gita because we think that's the book that we should read, because at least we've heard of that one. The other one, we don't know what that's about. Srimad Bhagavata. Anyway, Bhagavad Gita will do. So we look through the Bhagavad Gita, and we find this very nice picture of someone who sees with spiritual vision. And he's looking at a dog and he sees the spirit soul gleaming like a little light inside the dog. And then he looks at the tree and the Brahmin and the elephant and the outcast. And he looks at the whole world and he only doesn't see the outside, he sees the form. Not the form, but he sees the spirit soul within. The shining light, this quantum of consciousness, the spark of the supreme fire. This is his vision of the world. Then the very same person who says you should see like this says, well, actually, society should be divided into four divisions, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. And they all have their respective duties to do. And they've all got to get on. So how is this possible? On the one hand, Lord Krishna says, don't see any distinctions, just see the spirit soul inside of everyone. Because this is the truth. This is reality. The Vedas say it. The Upanishads say it. The Vedanta Sutra says it, the Mahabharata says it, the Bhagavad Gita says it. But then, we've got this problem that society has to be organized. In society, everybody gets labeled. How can you organize things without labels? You've got to have labels. Then you'll know what to do. Child learns labels and designations. Even a child in devotional service learns labels. When I was a child, I came back to Vedanta Manor and I had to go into the deity kitchen for something, not to cook. But I think we only had one kitchen. That was it. We only had one kitchen. It was like a very pleasant one kitchen. And someone had written on pieces of paper Krishna's fridge. They put Krishna's fridge. But then they'd gone around the entire kitchen labeling everything. Krishna's cupboards, Krishna's boga, Krishna's, knives. And I'm sure that at some stage in your devotional career, you've also seen a broom, which after spending thousands of pounds making this a very, look at it, it's beautiful, this is more beautiful than any cathedral. And then, but then the broom that sweeps this beautiful temple room floor, someone's taken marker pen, black marker pen, and written on the broom, temple room only, in wobbly black writing. Have you seen that before? Have you seen that? Temple room only. So we do that, we label things. What other labels do we give to people? Or things? What other labels do we have? Okay. call them out.
Congregational
member, right. When you bring your collection back at the end of the day, what do you call that? Money?
Lakshmi.
Okay. And we say, this is my collection, this is his collection. Okay. These are my books, those are your books. Okay. We distinguish them, we label in our minds. You cannot organize things unless they have labels, unless you know what they are, they have to have a name. But you can't organize society, any society, whether it's a society of five people called the family, or, I'll rephrase that for people who may be watching, family is any size of people who choose to live together in a house, or not in a house, perhaps in a tent. So, a small group, or a larger group, or a big group, which we call London, and we have someone called, the Mayor of London. You'll see his name everywhere, on everything. Mayor of London. So, many times is his name placed on things, it becomes a sort of, he himself becomes a corporate entity. You see. But it's, of course, the post. So, we're told, on the one hand, that you are a spirit soul, but at the same time, you are labeled so that in society we can know who you are and what you're supposed to do. Humor me. I'm going somewhere with this. It does get interesting. So in order to organize human society, Krishna has declared Chaturvanyam Rayashashtam, there's four divisions. So with those four divisions comes a handbook. And with the handbook, there are things that have to be done. And when everybody has their respective duties to perform, then society works nicely. And as we see, when Prabhupada says if the fingers try to do the business of the stomach, then there's chaos. Or if the fingers protest that, oh, the stomach just sits around all day, well, we have to do all the hard work. I go to work 8 hours a day and I use my hands. And what does the stomach do for 8 hours a day? It just sits there. And I feed him, this is all the fingers talking to. We feed that stomach. What does he do? All day long just sits there doing nothing. And we have to work very, very hard, cleaning and chopping and sweeping and doing puja and everything. So then the fingers decided to go on strike. Okay, that's it. We're out. Okay, not doing anything at all. Okay. But then Prabhupada says the fingers started to become very hungry because the stomach, once the stomach was empty, and then the fingers became empty too. So all the different parts of the body have to play their respective roles. Everything is part of the whole. So in every society, there's people who do the leading, there's people who do the managing, make decisions. There's people who do other kinds of things. And then society can function, any society. And it seems that every society follows these rules. So scripture tells us two things. It says, see everybody equally, and don't see everybody equally. Well, what are you supposed to do with that? See? He is a sannyasi, and he gets two cushions. He's the temple president, he gets one cushion. He's a sankirtan devotee, may not get a cushion. We behave differently according to the designation. Sannyas is a designation. It's part of Varnashram society. Brahmacharya is a designation. It's an upadhi, therefore. So on the one hand, if you think, I am a brahmachari, or I am a brahmacharini, you see, then you could say, you're in Maya. Because actually what you are is a pure spirit soul. But the way that you get to understand that you're a pure spirit soul, free from designation, is to act in the capacity of your varna and ashram status. at the time. If we have, Brahmacharya is saying, actually, I'm just a pure spirit soul, and so is she. And we're just all on this path back to Godhead together, then you've got a Brahmacharya with problems. Because when you're in that designation, you work according to those designations. You see? That's why we have difficulty explaining to people. When I was about 5 years old, my first school was a Victorian school, still following Victorian rules. And like here in this temple, there was one door for the boys and one door for the girls. We went into mixed classrooms, but we actually had to go through different doors so there would be no touching. And this was in England. Okay. And above one door, chiseled in solid stone, was the word boys. And the others, was the word girls. Now me, being a sort of adventurous kind of person, a form breaker, I would be in the, and there would be an imaginary line running down. I think I'm on that imaginary male-female ley line here, isn't it? This curve, the ley line runs. So men on one side, ladies on the other side. And I would always come up to the line and put my toe over the line, at which the girls would protest. I seem to be doing that for the rest of my life. But we would, as boys, would get fun from teasing the girls because we knew that we weren't supposed to. We had to stay on the other side of the line. Okay. So these are imaginary things in one sense, you could say. But in another sense, they're very real. Because you don't get emancipation, you don't get spiritual emancipation unless you practice sadhana. And you have to practice sadhana with the body that you have. This is the point. You practice sadhana with the body that you have. So if you have a male body, you act in that capacity as a male. If you have a female body, you act in that capacity as a male. Because that body and the upadi that you're born with, according to your prarabdha karma, it exerts a type of gravity on you so strong that it's very difficult to come out of the identity of female. Very difficult to come out of the identity of male, so that we continue to act in those capacities. Similarly, it's very difficult not to be a kshatriya if you were born one. It's very difficult. It's like if a person's a thief, Prabhupada says, if a person's a thief and he joins a group of pilgrims, but he becomes so overwhelmed by the Krishna Katar and the group of pilgrims that he becomes spiritually inspired. And he thinks to himself, fie upon me. I was born a thief, I've lived as a thief. No longer shall I be a thief. I shall be a devotee of Krishna. And I shall join these pilgrims going to the holy place. And Prabhupada says, at night he wakes up and he has to touch other pilgrims' bags. But he doesn't steal them, he just moves them around. And then he gets some satisfaction because he has to do what he has to do. He's conditioned. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, until you're conditioning your upadi that you have accepted, that you, the spirit soul, have accepted, until that's all worn out, you act in that capacity. So someone who is a married person acts in a different capacity. Okay. Someone who's taken vows of brahmacharya or vows of sannyas. Same person, you know, person comes into the fire yoga. I met a man recently who was 56, my age, and he had come to, you know, he was asked by his guru to take sannyas because his guru had a couple of heart attacks. He wanted to pass on the headship. This was in one of the Sri Sampradayas. So he had, and he'd been selected for his learning. He said, now I'd like you to take sannyas and, you know, head up the mutt before I die. And maybe this will give us about 4 or 5, 6 years so that you'll be trained fully when I pass away. So in the morning, he came with his wife to the lotus feet of his spiritual master, and they did the ceremony. And he did the last fire yagya as a grihastha. Brahmins, they do certain things every day. There's five things that a Brahmin does every day. And one of them is Vayakis. He reads the scriptures, he collects items for puja, he does japa, these things he does. So, and the wife is an assistant. When he's reading, she's an assistant. When he's collecting items for puja, she's an assistant. When he's doing the Vayaka, she's an assistant. Or if he has some disciples, they can help bring firewood and like that. But, so this man, he came, and they had a Vayaka. The wife got up, she went home. The man went to the ashram, shaved his head, went to the river, took bath, studied Shastra all day, and the very next day took sannyas. Just like that. So now he has a different upadhi. Same spirit soul, but his wife is no longer his wife. You see? Sannyas means you give up your wife. And that means renunciation. Sometimes we say brahmachari life is renunciation. It's not, it's student life. Sannyas life is renunciation because you've had something and then you renounce it. It's hard to give something up unless you've got it. Right? You can renounce something only when you've first had it. It's like, I totally renounce the Srimad Bhagavatam. When I leave Soho Street today, I have nothing more to do with the Srimad Bhagavatam. I give it to Soho Street. Well, that's very generous, considering it actually belongs to the Soho Street Temple. I haven't renounced it. There's no tyag. There's no tyag involved in something that you don't own. However, if you are married, then you have to behave as a married person, because that's also in Shastra. And so sometimes we've had our cases where devotees have, shall we say, they've become very liberal with their understanding of married life. And they have said, well, actually, what is this? It's just bondage. It is just this false designation, false connection. I'm not really her husband. She's not really my wife. Ultimately, we have to go our own way. And I'm going my own way next week. And so we've had a high level of men leaving their wives because of misapplication of the other side of the philosophy, which says that you are spirit soul. Yes, you're spirit soul, but don't forget that the very same person who told you that you're spirit soul also said that until all your desires are expunged, you have to be in the ashram that you've chosen. And there's four. Only four. And we've been very creative, you know, inventing other ashrams. I'm not a brahmachari, but I'm not a grihastha. Well, Prabhupada says you're a demon. Because there's only four ashrams. Make your choice. Okay? There's only four choices. You either choose one or the other. Well, I'm just me. That's okay. But you have to be you so that we know how to deal with you. Actually, don't get worried. There are others in between. One is called the Snataka. Snataka means he's no longer under the rules of brahmachari life, but he hasn't yet found a wife. Or his parents have not yet found a wife. So we'll give you some grace then. So the whole point is Varnashram is important. And the reason I'm speaking like this is because Madhvacharya, this was his philosophy. Our philosophy is just a little less Varnashram because really we don't have a Varnashram society to fit into. Really. If you knew what the rules were for brahmacharis, grihastas, sannyasis, and vanaprastas according to traditional life, you would faint. And Madhvacharya, he took sannyas when he was 11 years old. 11 years old. And he was a sannyasi. That's determination. We'll get to him a little later. So here we have a situation. And according to which culture you're from, you will or will not be shocked by this proposal of the Brahmin Patnis, the Dvija Patnis. Because they're making something here which is quite shocking. They're making a suggestion here which is quite shocking. That they should leave their husbands and join Krishna. But it's as shocking as the gopis' declaration that they want to leave their husbands and join Krishna. And the point is here that the closer you come to Krishna, the more you will feel eternal. This is the point. As close as you get to Krishna, either in your spiritual relationship, or in this case, your physical /spiritual proximity to Krishna. But it's very difficult to come close to Krishna and not speak words which Krishna puts into your mouth. So Prahlad Maharaj, young boy, but we see such eloquent poetry coming from him. Dhruva Maharaj couldn't say anything, and yet when Prishni Garba and Narayan touched him on the head with his conch, he was able to speak eloquent poetry. So by the touch of Krishna, a dumb man can speak eloquent poetry. Someone who cannot, who's not a salesperson, can be on the street and can sell books about God to atheists. It's like, you know, book distribution really is like selling ice to Eskimos. Anyway, it's like selling something to someone, give me an example. Like selling something to somebody who really doesn't want it. Okay. Who wants a book about God? And in the book about God, several times you will hear that you have to give up all sense pleasure in order to achieve the happiness that's being described in this book. Who could sell a book like that? Who would even dream of going out on the street to sell a book like that? Only a person who's been touched by the grace of the Supreme Lord. So this movement, this entire Hare Krishna movement, is a movement the members of whom have been touched by the grace of the Lord, Sri Krishna Prasad. And that's the only way this movement runs, I'm absolutely sure. Sometimes we play around with different management schemes and we talk about using different terminologies and all in order to do things, but the real power of this movement is spiritual. There's nothing more than that. Otherwise we have such a diverse range of people, and they all live together, and they all, you know, sometimes speak different languages, and they have different views and different perspectives, isn't it? And what is it's a great miracle that we can all get on together. And we did. You know, so for 40 years, this place is here. And for almost as long, well, not 40 years, but you know, our movement is here in different locations, and the restaurant, you know, things crumble. One time we were sent a ballpoint pen from a company that made ballpoint pens. And it said, congratulations, ISKCON, you've been going for 25 years. You know, 90% of companies do not last 25 years. You know, so buy our ballpoint pens and celebrate that. But the point is, I was astonished at the statistic. 25 years is a long time. So, congratulate ourselves, but we have to understand this is mystical. So coming into the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any of his forms gives us a power that we've never had before. And sometimes we see this, don't we? We sometimes see devotees sadly leave the ashram and they break their connection with Krishna. And it's almost as if a shadow comes over their faces. Have you ever noticed that? And you see devotees, you know, and you see them several months later or years later, and their faces appear grey and troubled. You know, it's just not the same. Are you the happy devotee that used to live in the ashram at Silver Street? Yeah, that was me. But then we see the reverse effect, that someone comes, and they come from the street, and they come into the temple, and they begin our practices, and they're rising early, and cleanliness, and having their burden removed by Krishna, then we, because everyone has a burden. Everyone has a burden. And when they have that burden removed, then they get very great relief. I was reading the story the other day of one friend of George Harrison, David Wynne, the sculptor, who, when it was time to change the money in this country in 1970, so in 1969, he was commissioned to sculpt Her Majesty the Queen for the new 50p. Different sculptors were asked. So he gave the Queen a Bhagavad Gita. And as the Queen was sitting there, she was reading Bhagavad Gita. And she came, this verse was there that he'd said to her, he said, you can give Krishna all your responsibilities. Give it all to Krishna. Allow him to help you with the burden of your responsibilities.
That was, you know, what's in the verse. And she said, oh, she said, wouldn't it be nice if we could all give all our responsibilities to Krishna? Mm-hmm. This is the Queen speaking. Long time ago, 1969. So this in some traditions is known as Bharanyas, renunciation of responsibility. Renunciation of responsibility. However, that does not mean that now I'm free, I'm going to travel the world, and ISKCON's going to look after my wife and children. I've given my responsibilities. No. It means that now I have greater responsibility to follow scripture. So you follow scripture in two ways. One is by understanding that you have two journeys. One is your internal journey to see the soul as it is, as you are. And the other is to perform your varnashram duty, wherever you fit in. You receive a designation according to either the smaller society or the greater society that we live in. So, temple president. Is it a real thing? I think that Jayanatai Prabhu is going to be temple president when he goes back to the spiritual world. Is that his eternal designation? He hopes not. He'll be eternally serving Krishna. But it is a false designation. It's an artificial designation. But at the same time, from the point of view of becoming free from conditioning, it's a very real designation. Because that's his connection, that's his service to Srila Prabhupada, his spiritual master, and to Krishna. So therefore, at no stage of the game can he say, I'm just a spirit soul anyway. I just want to travel the world and chant Hare Krishna. Because Arjuna tried that one. And that's why we have the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna said, I just want to travel the world now and do whatever it is I was doing before. And Krishna said, no. And Krishna, as much as he's trying to tell Arjuna, you are spirit soul, samsi jiranami yatabihaya, he's also telling him, you're a kshatriya, and you have to act as a kshatriya. What are people going to say? They're going to laugh at you if you give up your post. You see? So we have this two-track thing happening. I fit into human society, but I also fit into spiritual society, and you have to adhere to both. And that's where the advice of the spiritual master comes in, to give you direction, how to do that, because sometimes it does get confusing. Am I a spirit soul, or am I a man? Discuss. Am I a husband, or am I a spirit soul? Discuss with your wife. Am I a brahmachari, or am I a grihastha? Discuss with your brahmachari leader, with the senior Vaishnava. So these things need to be, they need to be discussed very carefully. So here we find such a situation. We find that the wives of, when do we finish? Half past, isn't it? Is it razor sharp half past? 10 minutes. 10 minutes? Okay. 10 minutes, everyone? Is that okay?
Yes.
Now, who's not acting inside his designation? Class givers finish at 8:30. So here, the Dvijapatnis are coming to Krishna and they say, look, we have this identity as the wives of the Brahmins, but we really know that we're spirit souls. And we are your eternal servants. So now what we want to do is we just want to stay here with you. Well, who else tried that? It was the Brahmin that tried that with Lord Chaitanya. He said, now I've understood. I just want to travel with you. I want to give up my responsibilities here in this village. What good is it doing me? How my life will be perfected if I can just travel with you? And the Lord said, Stane Stita, stay in your place. Because by executing your varnashram responsibilities in devotional service, you will come to me. So here's the point. So there's no record that the Dvijapatnis stayed with Krishna. They went home. But this expression of, you know, I just feel completely free from all designations, and actually I understand by your grace, Lord. So the same Krishna who's allowing you to understand that you're a completely unfettered, completely free, emancipated soul is also saying, but for the time being,
work according to this capacity, because I see that you still need to. So this is the strange conundrum that we have. And it's this conundrum that Madhvacharya, whose disappearance day we are celebrating today, it was this conundrum that he had to play with. So his philosophy is sort of interesting for us. I just want to give a brief rundown of his life, because I think you'll find it interesting. He was born in the year 1238. He lived for 79 years, and he passed away in 1370. That's a long time ago. He's one of the greatest Vaishnava acharyas. Sampradaya is still very vital, still living. You can go there today to the seat of the Madhva Acharya followers. His philosophy is known as Dvaita, or complete dualism, complete difference between the soul and God, as distinct from Vishishta Dvaita, which is qualified monism that was taught by Sri Ramanujacharya 100 years previously. He was born on the day that Ram conquers Ravana, Vijayadashami, that we sometimes celebrate as Dussehra. He was born on that day. It's a very good day for people to become initiated. There's a couple of traditional times when you become initiated. Vijayadashami is one of them. He's said to be the third incarnation of the wind god, Mukhya Pran, or Vayu. First was Hanuman, then was Bhima, and then is Madhva, Madhvacharya. He was born the son of Narayana Bhatta, father, and Vedavati. Born in a place called Pajaka, little village, little hamlet, really. I've been there. There's hardly anything there. There's like seven houses, maybe, and a gurukul. Nice gurukul. All the boys, I said, can you chant something for me? So there's about 20 boys, and they're all chanting some Purusha Sukta. many miraculous stories. But the main miracle that we're concerned with is how this little boy, who's at that name, whose name was that time, was Vasudev, he very quickly learned Shastra. And he learned Shastra so well that he became initiated by his spiritual master called Achyuta Preksha. And he became not only initiated as a brahmachari, but initiated as a sannyas. You know, sometimes people can, they're so good that they take sannyas. I think Bhakti Charu Swami was initiated as a sannyasi. How long after? Six months later, couldn't sannyas. That's fast. Goga Vinamarja Lutra. So this is fast tracking. So with Madhva, we hear a wonderful case of fast tracking, 11 years old. Now, they don't do it according to the system that we follow in ISKCON, that maybe he'll make his sannyasi, maybe he won't. They look at the astrology, they look at the parents, and they look at his palms. Because on your palms, you will see whether you can be renounced or not. So they will look, and they'll find some boys at the Gurukula, and they say, well, this boy will be good for renunciation. So I've met a few of them, and one took sannyas when he was 12, another took sannyas when he was 14, another one at 16, like that. They took sannyas quite early. And over the past 800 years, how many sannyasis have fallen down from the Madhva sannyasis? Just one. He's a very nice devotee. Anybody's still practicing? It was just that he came to the point where this wasn't relevant. So, but he's still teaching. Very nice person, very friendly to ISKCON. And so then, 1 month later, after he took sannyas, he defeated a group of scholars. And he became known as Ananda Tirtha. But when he wrote books later on, he signed himself Madhva.
And this was his pen name. So this was the name that he came to be known as. When he was a teenager, he toured all over India. And according to his biographers, he defeated many scholars. This is a person who, you've got to understand what people did in those days was, if you were traveling, you engaged in scholarly debate. And you would debate until you wouldn't engage in debate. It was like a kshatriya drawing a sword. If a kshatriya draws a sword with another kshatriya, you fight until somebody wins. Otherwise, why did you draw your sword? So if you go into a debate, you go into a debate because you think you're going to win. So here's this teenager, and everywhere he goes, people think, yeah, I'll take you on. Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough, you know. I've got shlokas that'll make your hair curl. I'll sit down with you. And they would debate Vedanta. Now, we don't do this. We don't do it so much in ISKCON. It's a very good principle, actually, to debate. So in our preaching, sometimes we tend to avoid debate. But it's good to debate if you're going to do it successfully. But people are not good losers. This is a difficulty. When you go to a university and you debate with someone, they will never lose. Rather, what they'll do is what Prabhupada said. He said, the man is drowning. There was two men. They saw a piece of string. One man said, just see this. Somebody's cut this string with a piece of rope, with a knife. And the other man said, no, no, it's obvious. Someone's cut this with a pair of scissors. And so they were walking along the bank of the river. Scissors, knife, scissors, knife, scissors, knife. And Prabhupada said, then they became very heated, and one man pulled the other one into the water, put his head down under the, and so the bubbles were coming, he was to the death, this argument was going. And as the man was drowning, his hands came out of the water. Scissors. Okay. So Prabhupada says that this is, until the death, people will fight their position. Whether it's a true story or not, don't get upset. But people are poor losers. You can speak to them on a point of Krishna consciousness philosophy, and it can make very good sense to them, but they won't change their life. But in medieval times, if you were defeated in Vedanta by another scholar, you'd have to become that person's disciple, or at least agree and write something that said that, you know, you win, I lose. So it's all on the basis of Vedanta. Why? Because Vedanta is a commentary on the philosophical portion of the Vedas, which are known as the Upanishads. And Vedanta is known as one of the Prasthana Trayi. Trayi means three, and Prasthana means the... anytime you get the word pra, it means a going forward. Prapadyate, you know, prapanam, like this, means a going forward, Prasthana. And sthana means from the place, going forward from the place. So it's a departure point, or a starting point on the journey, if you like. So a starting point for the journey of a philosophical life is Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra. They have two names, Vedanta Sutra and Brahma Sutra, same thing. And the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. So anywhere in medieval India, you could go and you would debate on these Prasthana Trayi. So Vedanta Sutra, you had to prove your philosophy. Just like if you say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you cannot use Srimad Bhagavatam in order to prove it. Or if you do, you have to prove that Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary by the same author on Vedanta Sutra. It's Vedanta Sutra that gives you proof of your philosophy, which we'll come to in a little while. So the Vedanta Sutra is 555 verses. It's not long. But they're sutras. That's why it's called the Vedanta Sutra. And the sutra is a, you know, it's a bead on a necklace. It's a necklace of beads of wisdom, but highly condensed. And it's in four chapters, and four chapters deal with how it's the beginning of spiritual life. It's removing obstacles in spiritual life. It's practicing spiritual life. And it's the rewards of spiritual life. And normally when you write a book, that's how you would write it in Vedic circles. Okay, so he was going everywhere, and he was winning.
And so he was actually winning disciples. And he wrote 37 books altogether, and some of them have gone on to become real classics that we even study today. And it's a very great tradition. It is said that he went to the Himalayas, and there he met Vedavyas. We say that Vyasadeva initiated Bhattacharya. The Madhva Sampradaya say Vyasadeva didn't. They say he gave him Shalagram. Now, gave him Shalagram, and he corrected his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. We say that he was initiated by Vyasadeva. There's a first disagreement with them. So then he returned, and he wrote a commentary on the Ten Upanishads, and he wrote something called the Bhagavat Tatpariya, which went on to become very famous. Now, he was staying in a place called Udupi, because it's not very far away from where he used to live. And it's about 7 miles, it's about 15 miles to the village where he was born, about 7 miles away to a little nice beach called Malpe. So some devotees have now started calling this Udupi the Vrindavan of the South. I'll tell you why. It's very nice because it has a beach as well. Clean beach. So one time he was on the beach and he was chanting, and he saw a merchant ship. And there's when you go to Malpe, you will see a big rock. It was there in the 1200s. It's still there. And he waved his top cloth to get the merchant ship away, because the merchant ship was headed towards the rocks. And the merchant was very grateful. And he said, look, is there anything I can give you? I've got loads of stuff. I'm on my way down to wherever he was going, down the coast. He said, well, I'm a sannyasi. I don't have anything. I don't have any pockets. I don't have any possessions. But you can give me some tilak. He said, I see that some way. He said, well, the only thing that I've got is tilak. He said, oh, give me some Gopichand tilak. Gopichand tilak is a tilak that we use to make our tilak. Mm. It's very important. If you use other tilak, then you're a member of another sampradaya. You're declaring your allegiance to another sampradaya. But Gopichand tilak is from Dwarka, and it's called Gopichand because of the whole story anyway. The point is that when he was bringing this Gopichand tilak, a big ball of tilak, it must have been very big like this. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes tilak is in short supply. When I was a kid, there was no tilak. You know where we got our tilak from? Boots the Chemist. We went to Boots the Chemist in order to get our tilak. And we bought Fuller's Earth. Fuller's Earth was very fine clay. And that's what we used. We mixed it up. So it was kind of grey, a light grey tilak. So we were all Radhakund Babaji's. But when someone came back from India, which was very, very unusual because nobody went to India, when they came back to India, we'd have a little tiny, tiny little piece of tilak like that, and you'd use that, and you'd I got some real tilak. It was a very precious thing. And at that time, Prabhupada said, yes, this is like gold dust. So to get a big ball like this, when you're living in Udupi, where there is no tilak, okay, was a very great treasure. But inside there was an even greater treasure. And this was the deity of Krishna in his form as the young cowherd boy that the wives of the Brahmins prayed to in the Vrindavan forest. Actually, it's a form of Krishna stealing. He's got a churning rod for the milk. He's playing with the churning rod for the milk in Mother Yashoda's kitchen. So this is a form of Krishna in black stone. Madhvacharya found this deity. He was very strong, Madhvacharya. Very, very strong. Once he put the foot in his... He once challenged someone. He was a very great wrestler. He was a great wrestler because his body was very... he wasn't the delicate flower of a Brahmin. He was very strong. Very strong musculature. big thick legs, thick thighs, thick biceps, and he could wrestle. And one time he challenged a person not to a scholarly debate. He put his foot on the ground. He said, "Move my foot." He said, "But you're a Brahmin and I'm a wrestler." He said, "How strong can you be?" He said, "Move my foot." And they tried and they tried and tried. Couldn't move his foot even a little bit. Of course, in the movie, he's eating bananas. He could eat lots and lots of bananas. He could eat a whole pile of bananas at once. So, Krishna was installed, and Krishna is still there today, 800 years later. And you can go and see Krishna. They're very friendly to us. And every night, well, three nights a week, actually, they do Rath Yatra. Fantastic. Three nights a week, they do Rath Yatra. So they worship Krishna. And at one point, because Madhva was initiating some, you know, people, and their tradition is that you don't get, they have a different initiation tradition. You know, initiation means taking sannyas. They have a slightly different take on it. But he was becoming successful. I've only got 3 minutes left, actually. And someone called Padmanabha Tirtha stole his books. Now, if someone steals a few of your books, you know, a few copies of Veda or something, you know, it's... But to steal someone's books in those days meant that was the only book. It was the only copy. There was no printing presses. It was 1300. The printing press was not invented until 1496 in Germany and didn't reach India until 400 years later. But there was a great crisis. Someone had stolen his books. Now, with your books, it has all the consolidated wisdom. Prabhupada said everybody should read my books, but everybody should write. He said every devotee should write. Every day write something. So hang on a minute. Prabhupada's written all the books. Why should we write? And when we write, what are we going to write? What are our realizations? Well, no, Prabhupada said your realizations are very important. And what you want to communicate to others is also very important, because he said you will speak in your language. He said you take what I have given you and speak in your language. So anyway, he went and he eventually found the books and defeated the person and defeated a king, and then he defeated a Muslim king. It was a Muslim king. He had to, he was going to Kashi again, and or Badri again, and he had to cross the Ganga. On the other side of the Ganga in North India, of course, was it was ruled by the Muslims, who were very, very not helpful at all to the Hindus, and here was a Hindu saint coming, and he crossed the river, got to the other side, and then he was speaking to this gentleman in fluent Turkish. So here's Madhvacharya, he's speaking Turkish, and you know what he said to him? He said, "I worship the same God that you do. I worship the same Allah that you do. You worship Allah, I also worship Allah. We are all sons of the same Supreme God." And he was speaking in such a poetic, beautiful way that the king helped him on his journey and gave him everything that he needed. Where does that leave us? Well, he initiated some sannyasis. Now, the interesting thing is that in our Bhagavad Gita, we will find a list of 32 names. From Madhva, we have Padmanabha, Nrihari or Narahari, Madhavadvija, and Akshobhya. And these were all sannyasis. They were all his disciples. Sometimes we read that and we read that Padmanabha was a disciple of Madhva and Nrihari was a disciple, but they were all his disciples. They took sannyas from him. But there was a shiksha relationship between them, because one was the elder sannyasi and one was the junior sannyasi. Like that. So not a diksha connection, but a shiksha connection. Then sometimes we look at our Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, and we see that there are historical gaps. There's certainly a gap between Madhva and Srila Vyasadeva. And incidentally, they have a slightly different take on where it comes through. Ours, we come from, it's interesting actually, we have Kavi Karnapur. He writes that it goes from Lord Narayan to Brahma. And of course, now we say Krishna to Brahma. Narayan to Brahma, then Narada Muni, Vyasadeva, and Kavi Karnapur says then Sukadeva Goswami, and then Madhva. But he met Vyasadeva, so he initiated him. So then in the Madhva Sampradaya, it says, first of all is the swan incarnation of Vishnu, then from the swan incarnation of Vishnu to Lord Brahma, then from Brahma to the four Kumaras, then from the four Kumaras to Durvasa Muni, from Durvasa Muni to someone known as Gyanasindhu, and then there are five names. Then we come to Pragyatirtha. And Pragyatirtha was a very powerful Vaishnava Acharya. Then there's a gap of 400 years. Then comes Achyuta Preksha, who's the spiritual master of Madhvacharya. Excuse me, a gap of 400 years. I thought that only the Islam Parampara had historical gaps. No, they all do. The Ramanuja Sampradaya, interestingly, comes Vishnu, Lakshmi, Vishrakshena, the Alwars, and between the Alwars and Natha Muni, who is the great grand spiritual master of Ramanujacharya, we have a gap of 3,000 years, according to them. According to scholars, the Alwars occupy the space between 700 AD and 900 AD. But the actual Sri Vaishnavas say no, because they were, you know, almost prehistoric, and there was a gap of 3,000 years. So I'm just saying this because sometimes we get asked that obvious question. And the Madhvas, not the elder Madhvas, but the younger Madhva scholars, they want to debate ISKCON. You know, they want to debate somebody, because ISKCON's becoming, you know, worldwide, and they see ISKCON's on the web, and ISKCON's sort of everywhere in India, and they say, oh, you know, you claim to be Madhvas, and we're going to debate you. So that's fine. Unfortunately, religion is, one scholar said, religion is like a swimming pool. All the noise comes from the shallow end. So if you're, it's where the kids are. So the kids, they always want to debate. Yeah, I'll take you on. But the senior sannyasis of the Madhva Sampradaya, of which there are eight branches, okay, eight branches, they have great appreciation for Srila Prabhupada. In fact, I've spoken to them, they just shake their heads at what Prabhupada was able to do. Because they just can't comprehend. The Prabhupada traveled the world and gave something intact. That's the first part. First, that he did it. Second, that he gave it intact without compromise. Because there's some elements of Krishna consciousness that just will never be popular here in England, that people will never understand. Prabhupada could have left those bits out, but he didn't. Everything was preserved intact. That's they shake their head in wonder at that. Okay. But at the same time, certain things he adapted for the Western mind. Not much so. Not much at all. So, and the third thing that they shake their heads in disbelief at is that people actually followed it and took it up. And the fourth thing that is becoming very powerful for them is that the followers of Prabhupada's disciples are also strong in their spiritual commitments. Because that's the definition of an acharya. Definition of a guru is someone who's a teacher and who teaches disciples. Definition of an acharya is someone whose disciples have disciples and it gets passed on. Then you know that you're dealing with someone who truly belongs in their place in the parampara. Okay. It's easy to be a guru, harder to be an acharya. Acharya, because your disciples have got to make it as well as you. You can go back to Godhead and teach a few people. But if your students then become teachers, then we know that you're a great person. So sometimes they like to debate. Just in conclusion, I will say that in the 1600s there was someone called Vadiraj Tirtha. And the reason why we appreciate him is because he wrote an excellent commentary on Madhva's commentaries, which if you read it, as some of our sannyasis have done, like Sri Ramaraj used to study this book, Vadiraj was known as the hammer. He was known as the hammer preacher. You know, we had Lion Guru, he was known as the hammer preacher for the Mayavadis. Because he was so fierce and so tight in his explanations of Vedanta, basing everything on Vedanta, proving that the Supreme is personal. Now, for us, we think, yeah, anybody could do that. Well, no, you can do it now because someone's basically done it for you. But carving the Supreme Personality of Godhead out of Vedanta and then proving that Bhagavad Gita is the natural commentary on Vedanta by the person who is that Supreme Person, a lot has been accomplished in order to create the ISKCON that we have today. This wonderful movement that can roll forward, where even a child can speak Vedanta. In ISKCON, even a child can speak Vedanta. It's quite an amazing thing. It was never done before. ISKCON has never ever been done before. And that's why it's so amazing for these people who've studied Vedanta all their life to see what Bhakti Vedanta has done by taking this message all around the world. The other reason why we appreciate Vadiraj is he started something called Harinam Sankirtan Sangha or something like that. Harinam Sankirtan. Now, where do you think he got that idea from? It came because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the Tattvavadis in Udupi and left, but he left a mark. And it's interesting that now the Madhvas greatly appreciate this Harinam Sankirtan. And also the Sri Vaishnavas also appreciate. And there's now a couple of branches of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya that just say, you know, and I've seen the man in front of, you know, 1,000, 1,500 people at a time. He said the message of Ramanujacharya for this age is to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. They may not agree with all the fine points of the philosophy, but as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted, the four sampradayas are being joined together through the Harinam Sankirtan movement. We have only just begun. You haven't seen anything yet. You haven't seen anything yet. This movement will go on and on and on and be so successful. It's such a shame that we may not get to see it this lifetime. But if you want, you have a choice. You go back to Godhead this life, okay? Or you can take birth again and become a Sankirtan devotee. The next time around, you'll be a cracker. This lifetime you struggle. Next lifetime. Wow. It's amazing. You too can be a sannyasi at 11 years old. Go all around the world, defeating all the scholars. What about that? I'll leave you with that thought. So Madhvacharya ki? Krishna and the Dvija Patnis, ki?
Jai.
And Srila Prabhupada's great sacrifice for every one of us, ki?
Jai.
Hare Krishna. Shri Shri Aralanda, Shri Aragavanath, Baladev, Subhadra, Shri Shri Gaur, Anitai, ki?
Jai.
Jai.
Very much.
revealing so much about Madhvacharya, a very in-depth and informative enlightening class. So please let us express our gratitude and appreciation, Kripa Morgu, and encourage and inspire him to come back again sooner than
it's
tomorrow. So that's it. By chanting very loudly, three Hari Bol.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
Let's take a more Baruchi.
Yeah!
So we just have form score from yesterday. Not sure where the rest of them became manifested or unmanifested. There was something else. But yesterday at Amrata's Boutique, we distributed four books for 94 Lakshmi points. That's all she wrote. So now we're going to offer our prayer to the Lordships. Dear Shishu Radha Manishwar, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, Shishi Gauri Thai, and Giri Govardhan, we offer our most respectful obeisances unto you. With a mood of deep gratitude and appreciation, we request your causeless mercy upon us. For your pleasure, we are endeavoring to distribute the books of your pure devotee Srila Prabhupada to the fallen conditioned souls of London. Please enable us to cooperate together in a mood of selfless service in order to maintain and increase our efforts. Please send more devotees to assist us in bringing many new souls to your lotus feet. We, your surrendered servants, humbly beg. Ishwara Prabhupada shows the book distribution key. Jai Ishwara Prabhupada ki jai. So we just need volunteers to serve breakfast prasadam this morning. On the ladies' side, volunteers. 1, 2, 3, okay. And on the men's side, some volunteers to serve breakfast prasadam. 1, 2, and volunteers can help clean up the temple after breakfast. We need a few of those. 1, 2, 3, okay, wonderful. All right, there's many hands here. If everyone could please help to bring the prasadam. I'm not sure if it's outside. If everyone could please help, and then we can serve out. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai. Just one quick reminder, all department heads, there's a department heads meeting this evening at 6:30. In the seminar room, so if everyone can please. Oh, no, sorry, that's tomorrow night. Thank you. Tomorrow evening, Thursday. Hare Krishna.